this. It was the epitome of class and luxury, and at nearly 900 feet long, it was a modern marvel, the largest ship in the world, seen as virtually unsinkable. But on a fateful night in April of 1912, the RMS Titanic struck an iceberg and sank, killing more than 1,500 passengers aboard. Or did it? I'm Brian Fry, and this is Conspiracy 51. On April 10th of 1912, after spending 3 years under construction, the Titanic boarded for its maiden voyage. It was built in the port town of Belfast, Ireland, and sailed to the English port of Southampton to meet its first commercial passengers for the long journey ahead from Southampton to New York. An entire ocean separated the two cities, with very few places to stop along the way, but the ship boasted the best safety features available. This was a luxury ocean liner, after all. The official launch of the Titanic was a hugely celebrated event, garnering worldwide attention. It was very much a who's who: prominent business people, socialites, and government officials. Not to mention the immigrants, musicians, and service folk who crowded the lower levels. Leaving behind a cheering crowd of press and onlookers, the Titanic set sail for its first and final journey on April 12th. The world was watching. Aside from a close call with another ship in the Southampton Harbor, which required some careful maneuvering to avoid, the launch was a complete success. The ship sailed for 2 days and everything seemed to be going smoothly until the evening of April 14th. As the ship passed the southern coast of Newfoundland, Canada, some 400 miles from shore, they entered an area that was commonly known to contain large icebergs. By 1912, there were plenty of ships in the water all the time, and sailors tried to look after each other. The Titanic received 6 separate warnings about icebergs, including one from a ship that had been forced to stop entirely to avoid a catastrophe when they became surrounded by huge floating shards of ice. The warnings should have been enough to ensure the ship's safe passage, but the crew of the Titanic made several deadly mistakes. The first of these follies came when the two radio operators aboard chose to prioritize communications being sent between passengers over all other communication. When the ship that had been stranded among the ice, the Californian, tried to warn the Titanic about the dire situation ahead, they were met with complete disregard. One of the radio operators actually scolded the Californian's crew for interrupting his work. The two men failed to relay several of the warnings to the bridge. When finally Captain Edward J. Smith first received word that there were icebergs ahead, he ordered the ship to redirect further south in an attempt to avoid them. His mistake, however, was in keeping the ship moving at full speed. Captain Smith was relying on the two lookout stations in the crow's nest to alert him of any threats that happened to have drifted that far south. Apparently, he was unaware that the lookout's binoculars were missing. The two men were trying to watch for nearly invisible chunks of ice in the dark on a ship moving at full speed, using only their eyes. By the time the crew spotted the iceberg, it was already too late. The ship's first officer ordered them to turn and reverse the engines, but the iceberg was simply too close to avoid. Everyone watched in horror as the Titanic continued forward, colliding with the iceberg as it scraped the starboard siding of the vessel. Water began to fill the lower parts of the ship, spilling into every compartment, one by one. They sent out distress signals to every ship they could, but there was simply no hope. The only vessel close enough to reach them was the Californian, which was still trapped in the ice and had already turned off their radios for the night. Every other ship they were able to contact was more than 3 hours away, and the crew knew that by then, the Titanic would already be gone below the waves. Upon realizing just how bad the situation had become, the Titanic's crew were given orders to load women and children into the lifeboats. There were only enough to carry half the passengers on board, and to make matters worse, many of them were being lowered before they were even full, out of fear that the pulley system wouldn't be able to handle the weight of the lifeboats at maximum capacity. By 2:30 a.m. on April 15, 1912, the unsinkable ship had sunk. Only 711 of the 2,200 people aboard made it into the lifeboats to wait for rescue, and six of them died before returning to land. The majority of those who boarded the Titanic, including the immigrants and musicians and many service people, were buried at sea. The survivors waited for hours on the cold, dark water, hoping beyond all hope that someone would come for them. It was a horrific tragedy, that much everyone can agree on. Some, however, believe that much like an iceberg, there may be something hidden below the surface. The RMS Titanic had a reputation before it even set sail as one of the largest passenger ships ever built. This reputation, along with the crew's insistence that it was unsinkable, lend to the image of it being a unique vessel. In truth, though, the Titanic was part of a class called Olympic. Also belonging to the Olympic class were two other ships nearly identical to the Titanic. Those sister ships were the RMS Olympic, named after the class and the first of its kind, and the HMHS Britannic. As the first ship of the trio to be finished, the Olympic had already gained the unsinkable reputation before the Titanic ever set sail. On the Olympic's fifth voyage, there was a collision with the HMS Hawke, a British Royal Mail ship that resulted in damage to both vessels. The Olympic survived two large holes in its hull after the crash and made it back to the harbor for repairs. It was a miraculous survival, so the ship was called unsinkable. The damage to the Olympic needed to be repaired as quickly as possible so that the ship could continue to bring in money for the British White Star Line, as the company had suffered severe losses due to the damages and the ensuing court case with the HMS Hawke. White Star decided to take parts from the Titanic, which was still under construction in the same harbor, to speed up the repairs. A short while after the repairs were completed, the Olympic was involved in another accident, and again, parts were borrowed from the Titanic. These repeated incidents were costly, but continued to build up the idea that the Olympic was unsinkable, as it always managed to survive. Now, this is where the story really begins to get interesting. Like I mentioned before, the Olympic had caused White Star a lot of financial issues, and while it was under repair, it was docked right next to the Titanic, whose parts were used for the repairs. Now, many people believe that the British White Star Line actually swapped the nearly identical ships during those repairs. It was all part of their plan to rid themselves of the accident-prone, repeatedly damaged Olympic and to recoup their losses from the Titanic's insurance policy. If they succeeded, the company would be able to get rid of the old damaged ship while keeping the new one and the insurance money. What if the Titanic never actually left port in April of 1912, and instead it was the Olympic that set sail for its final voyage? Would White Star really sacrifice 1,500 lives and their reputation for an insurance scam? Believers in this theory have compiled a list of evidence for the switch, including photographs that don't seem to line up with the official story. In particular, one popular image shows two side-by-side photos of the Titanic. In the first photo, taken at the start of the Titanic's ill-fated journey, the ship is seen with 16 portholes. And in another, taken while the ship was still under construction, there are only 14 portholes. Now, this is interesting because both the Olympic and the Titanic originally had exactly 14 portholes, but the Olympic had received 2 extra during its repairs. If the two ships had been switched before the trip, it would explain the 2 extra portholes as seen on the Titanic. Another fascinating piece of evidence comes from the photos taken by divers of the Titanic shipwreck. Now, these photos show some of the hull where scraping from the collision seems to show white paint peeking out from underneath the Titanic's black hull. Now, the Olympic had a white hull, and a switch would have required the white to be painted black to match the real Titanic. So the white showing underneath in the photos seems to support the theory that it was painted over. Many of the other claims made to support the switch are based on personal accounts that can't be verified, but the photos are very compelling. However, upon closer inspection, the evidence for the switch doesn't appear to hold up. Let's start with the portholes. Both the RMS Olympic and the RMS Titanic were originally built with 14 portholes on the port side bow, with 15 on the opposite side of the ship. But in 1911, while the Titanic was still under construction, 2 additional portholes were added to the port side bow for a total of 16. Later on, during repairs, the Olympic also had 2 portholes added in the same area, as it was a convenient time to update the design since the ship was already docked. At the time of the Titanic's maiden voyage, both ships had 16 portholes on the port side bow. As for the white paint found on the hull of the shipwreck, it's actually not white paint at all, though it certainly does look like it in the underwater photos. The lighter color underneath the black paint of the Titanic's hull was actually the light gray primer that was used on all 3 ships before the final paint color was added. The iceberg had scraped off the top layer of paint, revealing the primer underneath. In order to switch the Titanic with the Olympic before the voyage, White Star would have had to accomplish several incredible feats. While the outsides of the two ships may have looked incredibly similar, and it's possible that a last-minute paint job might have convinced many people, the insides were unmistakably different. In the early 1900s, all ships had a unique identification number printed on nearly every piece, including the interior. Everything from planks and propellers to furniture and decorations were marked with the number 401 on the Titanic and 400 on the Olympic. There were 44 days total in which the Titanic and the Olympic were docked together before the Olympic returned to sea. In that time period, White Star's workers would have had to repair the Olympic enough to conceal the previous damage, pull everything out of both ships, and reinstall everything back into the opposite vessel. Both ships would also have needed to be repainted, and several structural differences between the two would have to be addressed. To accomplish all this in 44 days would have required an extraordinary number of workers at a huge cost to the company. All of the workers, thousands of people, would also need to be silenced in order for the fraud to succeed. They would also have needed a way to hide the massive amount of activity from everyone else in the harbor, a nearly impossible task. Even if White Star had been able to pull all that off, the numbers simply don't add up. The Titanic was only insured for $5 million, and each of the ships had cost over $7.5 million to build. The insurance fraud would have led to an even greater financial loss, especially considering the amount of money required to complete the switch. Damaged or not, the Olympic was worth a lot more to them if it remained in service. So, if the switch never happened and the sinking of the Titanic was simply a tragic accident, how did the switch theory become so widely accepted? It actually began with a book called The Riddle of the Titanic by Robin Gardiner and Dan van der Vaart, published in 1996. Sales of the book were greatly boosted by the release of the James Cameron movie we all know and love today, The Titanic, released in 1997. In The Riddle of the Titanic, Gardiner, with the help of van der Vaart, attempts to explain how the collision between the Olympic and the Hawk was actually more serious than White Star let on, and the financial losses were devastating for the company. As a last-ditch effort to recover from the incident, White Star decided to switch the ships to get rid of the Olympic once and for all, collecting enough insurance money to build a new ship. The evidence presented in the book is mostly made up of easily debunked connections, like the porthole photos and unverifiable personal accounts. In truth, there is no solid evidence that a switch occurred. The ship that sank on April 14, 1912, was the Titanic, after all. The possibility that the legendary Titanic was the center of a century-long conspiracy fueled the imaginations of countless mystery fans, but the true mystery of the Titanic is even more interesting. The real question that has baffled historians and maritime experts is, why was an iceberg able to sink the Titanic in the first place? With all of the safety features on board and the superior construction of the vessel, an iceberg shouldn't have been enough to cause that much damage to the reinforced hull. Experts all agree that there were a variety of factors that caused the tragic fate of the Titanic, including the missed warnings, failure to slow the ship down, and the lack of safety supplies like lifeboats and binoculars, which we talked about earlier in the episode. In 2017, however, new evidence resurfaced that may have finally solved the case. A descendant of the head of engineering on the Titanic discovered photos in an attic from the weeks before the ship's maiden voyage. These photos made their way to an Irish journalist who had a long-running interest in the history of the Titanic. And he noticed that there was something off about them. Several of the photos showed a long black streak coming from one of the lower portholes located in the ship's coal compartments. After consulting with experts, the consensus was that the streak was in fact smoke from a fire that had started in the coal compartment. Now, early news articles and passenger reports from the time of the accident actually confirm the theory that the coal fire played a vital part in the ship's demise. The fire had been burning since the ship set off, but it had been largely ignored in fear of bad press. The ship was large and made of metal, and they didn't plan on crashing into anything, so the crew planned to get to their destination as quickly as possible, put out the fire without drawing any attention to it, and celebrate a successful voyage. This would also explain why the captain was so determined to keep the ship running at full steam, despite the apparent danger. The iceberg on its own shouldn't have been enough to bring down the Titanic, but the fire had weakened the metal structure of the ship, leaving it vulnerable at the time of collision. The ill-fated Titanic serves as a good reminder that the most interesting mysteries are often the ones we overlook. I'm Brian Fry, and I'd like to say thanks for joining me on Conspiracy 51. If you enjoyed this episode and want to find more like it or support the show, then visit anchor.fm/conspiracy51. I also want to give a special thanks to SV Teague and Mike Garrival for writing and producing this podcast with me. It has been truly a pleasure working with them both. For all you believers and truth seekers out there, it's been a pleasure. This is Conspiracy 51.